You know, think about those moments, those really quick, fleeting feelings you get sometimes. That tiny whisper way in the back of your mind, just telling you something feels, well, off. So subtle, right? You could easily just brush it aside. But then later, maybe much later, you look back and realize, wow, that feeling was actually, it was important, hugely significant even. We're just swimming in information all the time. Everyone's looking for like the quick answer, the shortcut. But what if the really crucial warnings, the ones that matter for, you know, our safety, our well-being, what if they aren't shouted? What if they're hidden? Maybe right there in front of us, or maybe even deeper inside us in our own intuition. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something quite chilling, a true story. And it's a story that serves as this powerful, almost haunting reminder, a reminder about why we absolutely need to listen to those inner warnings. Our sources for this deep dive, they're excerpts from The Last Letter, Hannah Klein's vanishing warning. Specifically, we're looking at a True Crime Chronicles account of her case, and maybe most importantly, Hannah's own diary.
So our mission today is to pull out those critical lessons from what happened to Hannah, lessons that often get missed. It's not just about spotting the obvious red flags, but also understanding the psychology behind why we sometimes dismiss our own gut feelings, and maybe how we can learn to trust that inner voice even when it doesn't seem logical.
And that's really vital, I think, for anyone listening, because cases like Hannah's, they shine a light on these often, well, underestimated psychological parts of staying safe, being aware. We're not only talking about dangers from the outside here, we're talking about what goes on inside, you know, the cognitive biases, the social pressures, all the things that shape how we see potential danger and how we react or maybe don't react. Understanding these dynamics, these sort of subtle shifts in internal battles, well, that can be an incredibly powerful tool for you, for navigating your own world with maybe a bit more awareness and self-protection.
That's a really strong point. It makes you think immediately how easily we can just, you know, talk ourselves out of what we feel. So, okay, let's place ourselves there. We're in Boston, Massachusetts, a city full of history, right? Cobblestone streets, colleges everywhere, lots of energy. The True Crime Chronicles piece describes it as a place where secrets lurk in plain sight. I like that phrase. And that's where we meet Hannah Klein. She's 20 years old, a college student. People knew her for like her bright smile. She was really curious about everything. By all accounts, just living a normal, full life. But underneath that ordinary surface college life, in a historic city, something really extraordinary and frankly terrifying was starting to happen.
Yeah, and what's so important to get right from the start is that the danger didn't just, you know, show up announced, bang, here I am. No, it was more like a whisper at first, a slow chipping away at her feeling of safety. The people closest to Hannah, her friends, classmates, they started noticing these, well, subtle changes in her, how she acted, her general mood in the weeks before she disappeared. And these weren't like huge flashing red lights that we might imagine when we look back. They were quiet, insidious changes, the kind that are so easy to just dismiss, right? Or maybe rationalize away, oh, she's just stressed with exams, or maybe she's just having a bad week. It's these behavioral anomalies, these things that don't quite fit the usual pattern, that are often the very first warning signs, and the ones most easily ignored before things get, well, much worse. It's kind of unsettling, isn't it? How many of us might just write those things off as everyday stress? The sheer normalcy of those early signs is almost what makes them so dangerous.
That's incredibly insightful.
Yeah.
The normalcy masking the danger. So, okay, let's unpack this a bit more, because this is where things start feeling really, really unsettling. The True Crime Chronicles account, it details these specific unnerving interactions Hannah started having.
Yeah.
With a stranger. So picture this.
Yeah.
You're in the library, you're trying to study, and you start finding these weird anonymous messages left for you in library books, not like direct threats, but just odd, creepy. Then maybe you're walking back to your dorm late at night and you start hearing these whispered warnings, not to you directly, but like about someone following you. Again, not a direct threat, not yet anyway, but deeply unsettling. And the source talks about Hannah's internal struggle here, this growing sense of unease, what you might call an effective forewarning. Is that the term?
That's a good term for it. Yes, yeah. An effective forewarning, a feeling-based warning.
Right. He was really trying to dismiss it, telling yourself, you know, it's nothing. It's just my imagination. Maybe it's just some stupid prank. Mm-hmm. In your experience, is there a point where that kind of uncertainty, that ambiguity, becomes almost scarier than a clear threat?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. What we're seeing here is a really powerful cognitive bias kicking in. People often call it normalcy bias, or mm-hmm. sometimes the ostrich effect. You know, our brains, they actively try to keep things feeling normal, feeling stable. So we tend to downplay or even just ignore things that don't fit that normal picture. Hannah wasn't just dismissing a feeling. Her mind was, in a way, trying to protect her from the feeling of chaos by explaining away the danger, trying to make the world feel safe again. So this internal conflict between the rational brain wanting everything to be normal and that gut feeling screaming something's wrong, that's exactly where these critical warnings often get lost. And yes, the ambiguity itself is terrifying because it doesn't give you a clear what to do next. It leaves you stuck in this really unsettling limbo, and your mind just desperately tries to find the least threatening explanation to get out of it.
Okay, wow. Normalcy bias. That makes so much sense. And this next detail, it just ramps up the danger we've been tracking. It really marks a critical turning point. One evening, an anonymous note gets slipped right under her dorm room door, and the message was blunt, chilling, and designed, it feels like, to completely isolate her. Trust no one, not even your friends. I mean, getting a message like that, it must just shatter your sense of security, your trust in everyone around you. Now, Hannah, even though the note said not to, she did what most of us would probably do. She shared it. She showed it to a close classmate. And her classmate, thankfully, was like, whoa, you need to take this seriously. Recognized how bad this was. But the note itself, trust no one. I mean, does that put Hannah in this awful psychological bind, even as she was trying to get help?
Indeed. That's exactly right. What's so fascinating and frankly disturbing here is how insidious that specific message is. This wasn't just a warning anymore. It was a deliberate strategy, a strategy of what we might call social disenfranchisement. By telling her point blank not to trust anyone, not even her friends, it creates this profound sense of being trapped psychologically. It basically weaponized her natural human need to seek comfort and support from others. It turned that instinct against her. So she's caught, right? On one hand, her gut feeling and her friend's advice is telling her to reach out, get support, get validation. But on the other hand, the note itself is screaming, don't do that, you can't trust them. That creates intense cognitive dissonance, mental conflict. And that marked a huge escalation because it moved beyond just subtle weirdness outside to a direct manipulative attempt to control her social world, her perceptions. It was trying to cut off her lifelines, basically, making her much, much more vulnerable.
A deliberate strategy of social disenfranchisement, that's chilling, cutting off her lifelines. And just heartbreakingly, Hannah's attempts to figure out what to do next, how to handle this new level of threat, they were cut short, tragically short before she could really take action. The True Crime Chronicles piece recounts this accidental confrontation that happened in a quiet Boston alley. What started as apparently a heated argument just escalated tragically, and Hannah's life was cut short. The source describes it as a moment that seemed almost random, yet was chillingly inevitable. And it's that feeling looking back, that sense of awful inevitability that really makes this story so haunting, knowing all those warning signs that have been building up.
It really is the tragic endpoint of all those signals that were either, you know, ignored or dismissed or maybe even actively manipulated, like with the note. That feeling of tragic premonition you mentioned, it comes from understanding that the whole sequence of events, those subtle changes in her, the creepy interactions, the anonymous note, they were all pieces of a puzzle. And when you put them together, they pointed to a clear danger that was just getting worse and worse. So the final confrontation, it might have looked random on the surface, like just a chance encounter gone wrong, but really it was the awful conclusion to a threat that had been growing persistently and that Hannah had been aware of and struggling with.
So what does this all mean, especially for us listening today? The True Crime Chronicles reveals this twist, the thing that came out after she was gone, that just brought everything into this sharp, painful focus. Days later, Hannah's roommate found her diary. And it wasn't just like a casual diary. It was meticulous. She documented everything, her fears, every suspicious thing she'd noticed, those gut feelings, those effective forewarnings that she just couldn't shake. And the final entry, stark, haunting. It just said, I wish I had listened to my own voice. That diary found afterwards, it became more than just her private thoughts. It became the key, really, the key to understanding the full danger that had been surrounding her. It was like the undeniable proof of all those quiet whispers she'd been hearing, both outside and inside.
Yeah. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, Hannah's diary, as tragic as it is, offers these incredibly profound, really actionable lessons for us, for you listening. First, it just hammers home the critical importance of trusting your instincts, your gut feelings. Her detailed notes show that she was aware. She wasn't oblivious. Her intuition was speaking loudly to her. But that very human tendency to rationalize, to explain away those feelings, which was made even worse by the psychological tactics used against her, like that note. Well, it proved devastating. This isn't about, you know, living in constant fear. It's about learning to cultivate a stronger awareness of your own intuition and paying attention to those subtle warnings in your environment. Second, the diary really highlights how necessary it is to speak up, and maybe even more importantly, to document things when something feels wrong, even if it seems irrational, even if you can't quite prove it yet. While Hannah did share the note, remember, many of those earlier subtler signs seem to have been kept mostly to herself, or maybe dismissed internally. So Hannah's diary becomes this crucial example of documentation, making a tangible record. It helps validate your own instincts, even when other people might brush them off, or even when you might try to brush them off. It's not just about telling someone how you feel, it's about building a sort of case for your intuition, creating a reference point that can help you push past that normalcy bias we talked about. We can learn from this, right? If something feels off, write it down. Date, time, place, what exactly happened, how it made you feel. Just getting it out of your head and onto paper gives that internal alarm a concrete form. And finally, her story really forces us to recognize how insidious manipulation can be, especially tactics that aim for that social disenfranchisement, the ones that tell you not to trust anyone. Understanding that this is a deliberate psychological strategy is so important, because when you're faced with that kind of message, the response that feels counterintuitive but is actually necessary is often to seek more connection, more external validation, to reach out to people you trust, but precisely because the threat is trying to isolate you. It's about building or maybe reinforcing a network of trust that can act as a sounding board, help you figure out if it's genuine intuition or maybe just anxiety.
That difference between intuition and anxiety, yeah, that's so key. And the idea of documenting as a strategy, not just venting, but strategizing, that's really powerful. Hannah Klein's story is chilling, yes, but it's also this profound, urgent reminder. A reminder about the huge impact that seemingly small, easily dismissed warning signs can ultimately have. It really makes you face the irreversible consequences of ignoring them. Her diary feels like a silent scream from the past, just begging us to pay attention, to validate our own internal alarms, and to understand the psychological forces, both internal and external, that can work against us when we try to listen.
And it really raises an important question for you, the listener, to think about. In a world that's so full of noise, so many distractions, and this constant pressure to be, you know, rational, how do we actually learn to truly hear our own inner voice? Especially when it's whispering those warnings that maybe we'd rather just dismiss. I'd encourage you to maybe reflect on times in your own life where your gut feeling, that intuition, either served you well, maybe steered you away from trouble or towards something good, or perhaps times when you ignored it and maybe regretted it later. What did those moments teach you about the sort of nuanced power of your own intuition, and how might you build a better, maybe more robust system for validating it and acting on it going forward?